This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to Empowering Motherhood. I'm Tara Darlington, here to guide your journey and bring some light to it. So today we have Mike Lazar and we're talking about playing and the importance of play for children. And it really has been hijacked with a lot of things. It's been hijacked by safety, it's been hijacked by computers, and it's been hijacked by sort of, you know, organized activities after school. Some kids are in schools every day, I think. So I just want to welcome Mike Lanza, and let's get straight into it, Mike, with asking you, you know, how you got so passionate about this topic.
Well, my oldest son, I have three boys, 11, 8, and 6. When my oldest son was close to being born, I started to really pay attention to children's lives for the first time since I was a kid. I had been a single hipster guy in San Francisco, and my wife and I were, you know, out and about doing the young adult thing. But then, you know, we were going to have kids, so I started asking around to friends of mine who had kids, you know, what do your kids do? What are their lives like? And I was appalled. I could not believe that they didn't go out and play. They were pretty much uniformly either watching screens or outside the house, but in adult administered activities all the time. They didn't have time to themselves playing outside. And I thought back to my childhood, and my best memories were, most of them were with my friends with no adults around. Not to say I didn't love my parents, but there was something very special about being in that protected zone in the neighborhood playing. And I thought that was, you know, that's my benchmark for a great childhood, and these kids weren't getting it. So I decided I'm gonna make it happen somehow. It's turned out to be a lot harder than I thought it was, but I think we've done it.
Yeah, it's exciting to get back onto that path because so many kids are missing out. And it's interesting, actually, when you were saying about, you know, off playing, you know, to you, your parents were out of sight. And I was listening to an author being interviewed the other day about how all the most popular books for boys are where the parents are quickly out of the way and the kids are off on an adventure and, you know, discovering the world and doing this and that. And yeah, kids are really missing out on that in a big way. So let's just start with some of the things that, you know, we used to all do a lot that we're not doing, you know, that kids are missing out on now.
Well, fundamentally, and I talk about this pretty well in the book Playborhood. By the way, the book Playborhood is the American spelling, Playborhood. I talk about how we had a neighborhood hangout. Actually, we had two of them, places that we could show up pretty much any time after school or on weekends. And, you know, almost always there'd be something going on. There'd be somebody there. We didn't have to worry that if anything was going on or not. There was always some action. And so having an anchor place, a hangout, is fundamental to our childhood. There's a concept in sociologists has coined the term a third place, because he's defined three different places that people have in their lives that form the foundation of their social life. The first place is their home. The second place is their workplace or school. And then there's this third place that's a place kind of like, you know, if you've seen the TV show Cheers, the Cheers bar or the neighborhood hangout, where you could just show up anytime and unannounced and enjoy yourself. See people you want to see, chat with them, and leave when you want to leave. And that's been fundamental to human beings. But it's largely left the life of adults and children. Children now have replaced that to some extent, and adults have replaced it to a large extent with online social media websites like Facebook. The most important thing, I think, it sounds mundane, but there's all sorts of great things that happen there, is having a place that you can go to, that you can rely upon on a regular basis. And that's something that I've definitely done for our children.
Yeah, I totally remember that too. When we grew up, our house backed onto a park. So we would just go out there to the tennis courts and the trees, and people would be there, and we'd just have games that would go on for weeks, I think.
Yeah. That's having some continuity of play from one day to the next is really important, and being able to leave things wherever you are in the game and being able to come back and pick it up again is really important too.
Yeah, and that takes on a whole another dimension that, yeah, I noticed that kids are really missing out on that now, where, you know, I'll make my kids have no TV for 6 or 7 weeks once a year or twice a year, because I'm just going, okay, we're going to go and just not have any TV
wow.
at all. And they'll go out. And it's interesting, though, to see. So one time they started in the sandpit playing, and then that sort of, they got the hose and the water was going down through the backyard, and that became a whole dream. And then they created a village along the stream and cubby house down the back, and, you know, they were coming back each day. And so, you know, that went on over a couple of weeks, this game. And if they had stopped and come back inside to the screen, which seems to almost be like a full stop on a bit of play, you know, they would never have taken it past the sandpit and the hose, probably. It wouldn't have developed into this whole, you know, right at the other side of the property, a village, and everyone pitching houses along the side of the
right.
stream, and the whole
right.
game that came from there. So that, you know, really evolving their imagination, really playing out that whole new level when they're allowed to, that play does continue on, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's very important to me, for my kids, and I think it should be for everybody else, that their children have their own culture, their own folklore. Their culture, their folklore shouldn't be borrowed or adapted from the media. It shouldn't be about the TV programs and movies they watch. They should have their own culture. You know, the only way to really do that is to have lots of spare time to play, to think, to come up with societies, worlds, rules, roles, all those things. And those things, naturally, if they start and if they have time, they'll continue day to day. They seem obscure to us as adults, but there's so much rich creativity, so much you know, so many great skills that kids develop in doing that can carry on in adulthood.
Yeah, and children, yeah, and there's a lot of skills, you know, with the conversation around education, what qualities are our children needing to develop for, you know, these times and for their future when they do come out of school? What qualities do we want them to have? And that type of play is really important for the problem solving, as you know, just as you were talking about, for developing empathy, for leaders to come out with their leadership skills, and people who work well in a team to come out with those skills in a very natural, free-form way, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, I'll be clear. So I have three boys, so I'm very familiar with active play and sports. The way most people think about sports is not the way sports has to be. Most people today think of sports as being, you know, adult administered sports where kids are playing in leagues and there's adults all over the place telling them what to do and, you know, establishing the rules. But sports can also be what we call, when I was a kid, pickup sports, where we choose the games, we choose the field, where the kids make decisions about, you know, what the rules are and how the rules should be applied, and they settle their own arguments. And so role-playing games where, you know, kids are making up fantasy worlds, and physical games where kids play sports, you know, can all be, you know, very similar in the kids are making decisions, making rules, creating culture. It doesn't have to be where there's one kind of play for kids alone and another kind of play for kids with adults around.
Yeah, that's right. It's a really interesting thing to think about. And so a lot of this we're talking about is, at this moment, is outside play. So the importance of actually getting the kids outside more and making that a, you know, I guess a lot of people have the question now about how safe it is, you know, to let the kids play outside. Talk to us about that a
sure.
little bit.
Okay, well, there are a couple ways to think about it. One is, you know, just what are the general statistics of safety these days. I know in the United States, and I think it's pretty true of Australia as well, it is actually safer today than it was when most parents of today were kids. You know, most parents, a lot of parents say, oh, it's less safe today. Well, it's not. It's actually safer today. What's happened in the United States is through the 60s, up 70s, 80s, and 90s until early 1990s, violent crime went up in the United States, and then it's gone down since the early 90s. And so you can imagine, you know, a peak in the early 90s, and then it's been dropping for the last 20 plus years, and now it's about the level it was in the late 60s. So that's statistics. Another way to look at it is, well, what is your neighborhood like? What is it? You know, how safe is it where you live? I have a very strong recommendation in the book Playborhood that parents need to get out and about, and you know, rather than sitting and watching TV after dinner, they need to, you know, be out with their kids when they can, playing in the street, playing in front where there are no fences, knocking on doors, getting other people to come out, walking and biking to grocery stores and places rather than driving when possible. If you do that enough, from the time kids are, you know, able to walk or able to move around on their own, then kids become very comfortable with the place. They get to know the place, they get to know the people, and lo and behold, they feel a lot safer there, and they're more familiar. They can, you know, talk to somebody if they're down the street and they have a question. And a funny thing happens: parents all of a sudden feel like this is a safer place when they get to know those people, and they know their kids know those people. It's not a safer place, actually. It's just that familiarity doesn't breed contempt. It actually breeds a feeling of safety.
Yeah, interesting. I can imagine. Well, we've actually had our own little experience of that lately, not with the kids, but our coffee machine broke down. So we're up to walking up to the coffee shop. And we're like, oh, I don't think we'll get the coffee machine fixed, because we've been really enjoying, you know, the last couple of months of actually walking early in the morning, meeting all the neighbours, saying hello to everybody, having that interaction time, and coming home. So it's the same type of thing. You know, now everyone's got their own coffee machine. You sort of stop even going out for, you know, up to the local shops or whatever. So we have had that experience lately where we've decided we might not bother to get the coffee machine fixed, because we really are enjoying just being out in the neighborhood in the morning.
Yeah. I mean, some people live far off in Australia would be the outback, far, far away from anybody else, and you have to drive. But most people live in a place where if you slow down your mind and think about it, you don't have to drive nearly as much as you do. You know, you can take 20 minutes to 25 minutes to walk to the store sometimes, and it does the kids a world of good, because you know, they've evolved over thousands of years to interact with the world, not to sit in a harness behind someone and stare at their head. You know, that's not a quality experience.
No, it's not at all. And you know, they have that from babies. They're either in prams or buggies, or, you know, strapped in a car, strapped in a high chair. You know, it really does come back to just as much about what they're missing out on when they're not doing it as what they're getting. And so that gap starts to become, you know, bigger and bigger. So they're not just missing out on going to meet the neighbours and getting out there to play and all the things we've talked about already. But then they're not doing, you know, if they're sitting still, they're not actually doing anything. So that gap is becoming bigger and bigger and bigger between what we did as kids, what our parents did as kids, and what most children are doing now.
Yeah, and by the way, I've read a fair amount about the negative effects of television and other media on children, and the simplest explanation is, as you say, it's just time taken away from interacting with the real world. There's nothing particularly insidious about watching television. It's just that if you're sitting watching television, you're not talking to human beings. You're not listening to human beings. You're not interacting with three-dimensional things. You're watching a flat screen that actually is not interactive at all.
Yeah, that's right. So let me, I want to hear a little bit more about ways that people can start, you know, what's the first step for people? So if you haven't got this happening in your neighbourhood at all, your kids are watching a lot of TV, perhaps, you know, what is the first step for people to start making a change in their life?
Well, I'm going to say something that may be unfortunate for some parents, which is it's never too early to start getting your kids in touch with your neighborhood. You know, ideally, you start from the moment they're born. You don't have the television on. Television should never be a babysitter. You should be out and about walking and interacting with people. Kids, you know, it's a cliche, but it's true. They pick up on things that we don't even realize. And so if they see their parents talking to people, interacting, that's what they think is normal. That's what they think they should be doing when they get older. So, you know, start early. You know, to the extent that possible, don't put them in front of screens. Don't be driving them when you could be walking them. Even if you're pushing them in a stroller, it's much better than having them ride in a car. But then when they get old enough to start doing things on their own, you know, do things like try to make, as I mentioned before, a neighborhood hangout. Try to make a place. And by the way, that hangout really ideally is as close to their front door as possible. You know, it used to be that a neighborhood hangout could be the park a few blocks away. Unfortunately, these days that just doesn't cut it because kids don't wander that far. They have short attention spans. Other parents have their kids on a short leash. So a kid is not going to walk for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes to look at a park and see if there's anybody there, if there's anything to do. They're going to stay at home and turn on that television, turn on their computer, because it's much easier, it's much faster. So the neighborhood hangout, in order to be compelling, has to be very close to home. It has to be in your yard or an adjacent lot, something very, very close to home.
I just want to comment on that. That's quite interesting because with the so many after-school organized activities, as you're saying that, I'm sort of thinking about this. You know, a lot of those places are taken up, you know, so our local oval is always busy with after-school activities that have been organized for the kids. So even if they wanted to go there, it's actually not available.
Yeah. Yeah. So where can we go? You know, it's better. It's better if they have a place that's, you know, far less than perfect, very close to home, than something that's attractive, but as many blocks away, because kids just, they, you know, I don't know any kids who will wander for many blocks, 5, 10, 15 minutes away from their home just to see what's going on. They don't do it. The excitement's got to be very close to home.
Yep.
Yeah. And so that's another thing. As I mentioned, you know, things that we can do, make a neighborhood hangout, make your, be outside, get your kids to know the place and the people who live there. When I say make a village, another one is, really, you know, take it upon yourself as a parent, as parents, to teach your children how to be independent, how to be self-reliant. It's really funny or even embarrassing to see how a lot of parents just don't care how self-reliant their kids are these days. They, you know, they care about how much homework their kid does, what their test scores are in school, but you know, when I was a kid, another part of being a parent was boasting about how my kid can go to the store and buy this thing at the store and come home, or how my kid walks to and from school every day, or things like that. These days, a lot of parents don't care about that at all. And so they're raising kids who can't function in the world. Another issue I have with a lot of parents is they've been reading too many parent books or psychology articles and think, well, you know, this psychologist, that psychologist says when a kid reaches this age, then they can do this or that. It's kind of stupid. I mean, it really depends on how we teach our kids, what we have them do. You know, my kids have been riding their bikes in the neighborhood, you know, they're pretty independent, and my youngest is 6 years old. And I had a parent, a friend of mine who is a psychiatry researcher at Stanford University here, close to where I live. And she says, well, you know, some so-so has shown that a child cannot function properly on a road until they're 8 years old. That's just ridiculous. My six-year-old's great at it because he's been doing it ever since he was 2 years old. And I've, over time, taught him more and more about how to deal with cars on the road, how to deal with them, and I've been riding bikes with him to and from school for the last year. So he's good at it. It's experience, not just, you know, turning a certain age and some new neurons growing in your brain that makes it happen. It's experience, the teaching, and parents have decided for some reason that they don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. There is that. I have that with my kids because I call my kids free range kids, especially the little one. She's very free range, and often at the park she'll be climbing up, you know, trees or the climbing equipment, and people will often say to me, "Oh, wow, is she okay up there?" Or they'll start looking nervous. And I'm like, well, actually, she's been doing that since she was one. So, no, she's absolutely fine, you know. And it is about your environment and letting them, letting them experiment in their environment, which is that natural free play. There was a lovely Facebook group going around. I don't know if it's still around. I can't remember what it was called, where they were encouraging parents to just let their kids play a little bit longer without you interacting or interrupting them. And people were posting the videos of what the children done, even very young children, and they realized, oh, my child wouldn't have got to do that or work that out for themselves if I had have interrupted them or told them what to do or immediately interacted them, assuming that it's sort of entertaining them. And there were some lovely videos of young children climbing stairs where the parents thought they wouldn't be able to. Or there was this beautiful one of a girl, she had a ball, you know, sitting around the kitchen with a Tupperware. She had a ball and it kept falling out. And the mother said, normally I would have gone and started rolling the ball back to her and helping her get her the ball. But she just left her. And in the end, she got the ball swinging around in the bowl. And really, she discovered centripetal force at, you know, 1 year old, you know.
Yeah,
so there's that
real
allowing them to discover the world and life. And then they really are getting a foundation, you know, as far as education goes. They're getting real life experience of what all these things feel like and how, you know, the world is, aren't they?
Yeah. You're, the things you said just bring a couple things to mind. One is that, unfortunately, the kids that are controlled most by parents – need the most amount of time freed from their parents' control before they start to get good at figuring things out for themselves. So a parent who is a very controlling parent might say, oh, okay, I'll try it. And they'll try it for, you know, an hour one afternoon, and they'll discover nothing. They'll just conclude that they're these people are wrong. My kids can't do this. Well, this is a skill. Being able to play on your own is not just an instinct. It's partially a skill as well, that kids who do it a lot get very good at. Second thing I'll say is I relate a little story. So it's a good example of how kids, if you let them go, can do amazing things. My son Nico, who just turned eight yesterday on November 1st, he taught himself how to ride a bike without training wheels at 2 years and 10 months. It's an amazing story, but really not amazing. If you think about what we did, we basically he had three ingredients. He had inspiration, he had a prepared environment, and he had freedom. So the inspiration was he had his older brother, who's 3 years older, named Marco, riding his bike all the time, being a very good bike rider, and me. I ride my bike every day as well. So Nico saw us riding, and so he had this model to aspire to of his brother and me. Second, he had a prepared environment. In Nico's case, he had a very smooth driveway. Actually, when we moved into our house, we had pavers. We had these bricks in our driveway. I had them taken out and had smooth cement put in our driveway. So he had a very smooth driveway, and he had lots and lots of wheeled vehicles from his older brother, all sorts of stuff that he could play with. And the third thing he had was freedom. And for us and our family, we're the opposite of most families. Most families, they put their kids in front of a television and they don't pay attention to their kids, and they let their kids, you know, watch for hours. But when their kids are playing, they watch over their kids. They monitor their kids. We're the opposite. So when we don't have a lot of TV, but when I do put my kids in front of a TV, I'm there the whole time. I'm controlling the remote, and we're talking about it all the time. And that's intensive, so it's maybe a half hour a day. But when our kids are playing, they're playing, and we're not paying attention. So even when Nico was 2 years old, he was in our garage alone or with his brother Marco. We didn't really monitor him. And every day I remember coming back home from work, and I would see, you know, Marco riding around on the street and Nico in the garage. You know, he's on one vehicle, he's on another vehicle, he's trying this out, he's trying that out. One day I got home at 2 years and 10 months. Nico was on a balance bike, which is a bike that has no pedals and has these little places, little bars you can put your feet on. And it's meant for kids to learn how to ride a bike without training wheels. Well, Nico was riding the balance bike and he was picking his feet up. He was doing it. He did it by himself. He figured it out. So
yeah.
I grabbed his bike that had training wheels. I took the training wheels off. I put him in the street. 5 minutes later, he was riding it, and we were done. He figured it out by himself. And it's not that he's not an incredibly coordinated kid. He just had those three elements. He had inspiration, a prepared environment, and freedom. And that's, you know, think of the parents who have kids who are 6, 7, 8 years old who are going crazy trying to teach their kids how to ride a bike. It's the wrong model. Yeah, it doesn't happen all the time. It's hit or miss sometimes with kids. Some kids are more motivated, and Nico was certainly motivated, which is very important. But I guess a larger point is that, surprisingly, sometimes adult control can be counterproductive. Instead of instead of helping kids to learn better, sometimes it impedes their development. And just, you know, a little of those elements that I mentioned, it goes an awful lot longer than parents standing over kids, kind of showing them what they have to do or what they should do. I think a lot of parents, you know, a lot of us are busy. We work. We have this notion that, of spending time with our kids, like having meetings at work where we can have this special concentrated time with our kids when we get home in the night, and that'll be our quality time. Kids don't turn their, they just don't turn their learning on and off. They don't turn their attention on or off. They're pretty much on all the time. So there's no such thing as quality time per se with kids. They're learning all the time, and unfortunately, I hate to say it, if you're spending an hour a day with your kid, that's an hour of time, and the other 23 hours or, you know, the other 12 hours or 10 hours they're awake, they're with somebody else, and they're getting whatever they're getting out of those people that time.
Yeah, that's right, and it is something that as a society we're really going to have to look at some stage, because, a lot of children are exhausted, they're depleted.
Yeah, I talked about it a bit before, but just to emphasize, kids, the human beings, we've evolved over thousands and thousands of years before television, before video games, before automobiles. Our whole, we are animals who have been, been made to interact with the real physical three-dimensional world, to walk and to touch and to feel things ourselves. And when kids' lives come to be dominated by virtual screens or come to be dominated by being taken around, driven around, that's just time spent where they're not developing their senses, they're not developing their minds as they would if they were interacting with the real world. And so, kids don't need lots of stimulation. They can be overstimulated pretty easily. They don't need to be going to these great events that adults think are great events, driven across town. They just need, they're very observant. They take everything in. There's an awful lot of wonder they see in the world right around them, in their neighborhoods, in their yards, in the woods across the street. They really appreciate that. Far more than sitting in a car looking at the back of someone's head for an hour or a half hour. It's much more impactful for them.
And I saw something interesting on Facebook basically that said, you know, ask your grandfather what his favorite toy was. And I was thinking about our interview today. I thought it was a really interesting question to ask, you know, to get out there and ask your grandfather, ask your father, your mother's, you know, what their favorite toy was, because it's probably not going to be something necessarily expensive and fancy, but all those really simple things that kids love to do out to do outside.
Yeah, well, my father, unfortunately, my father just passed away recently, but I did have that talk with him a few years ago, and I videoed it. I made a little video of it, put it on YouTube. My dad made stuff. That's what he and his friends did. They didn't have much money. They lived close to a junkyard. They found scraps of this and that, and they made amazing things. They have fabulous stories. This whole notion that a toy is only something you buy in a store that has some relationship to a television program or a movie is a really narrow view of what a toy is. A toy, it can be a stick, it can be a rock, I think the most fascinating toys are things that you assemble yourself, you put together yourself. I think that store-bought toys get old very quickly.
Yeah, that's right. And I think so. I guess your father's hangout would have been the junkyard.
They made a shack out of parts that they found right around the junkyard. Exactly.
Yeah, excellent. Yes, I think it's just so wonderful to just really, not just to, everyone knows, it's always talked about that play is important for children. But what I love about what you're doing is that it's really looking at how and why we really need to bring it back. I think the how has been a bit of a stumbling block for people. And I know that when people really start to think about what qualities you need to develop in your children, you know, like self-reliance, like resilience, like problem solving, like working in a team or leading a team, all of these things start to come out naturally when they have the opportunity to have this free play. And that's a really big part of, important part of childhood that we really need to foster, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you know what, another thing came to mind when you were saying that to me, which is that, you know, we think a lot of things is in our lives is zero sum. In other words, well, you know, if I gain this, I lose that. But I've come to realize that, you know, if you invest the time when your kids are young, in making them and helping them to become independent, self-reliant, and helping them to learn how to play for themselves, then it's a win-win. They actually do better, and we as parents do better. So, you know, I'm in a situation now with my 11-year-old, Marco. He's another kid, just like my son, Nico, who's now 8. He's not remarkable. It's just, you know, we've sort of given him the tools to develop on his own. After school every day, he goes off on his own, and he has fun, and he plays with his friends. He skateboards. Sometimes they show up at my house. Sometimes they show up at other kids' houses. Sometimes they play at the schoolyard. And then Marco shows up every day for dinner at 6 o'clock. So we don't have to manage that time. We don't have to manage that time for him. He manages himself. And you know, he's learned how to be responsible enough to come home and show up for dinner at the right time. He has sports practices. You know, unfortunately, team sports these days, they're not set up to enable kids to be independent. And so Marco has a lot of, he has practices, he has games that are sometimes very far from our house. But when they're close enough to our house, he goes himself. He rides his bike on his own. And, you know, the first few times that happened, the coach was pretty shocked. But, you know, I Marco asked me, please come and tell the coach. So I did. I told him, Marco goes on his own. He's happy. Yeah. He feels independent. He's proud of himself. And I don't have to take him. It's great. Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't mean that we don't love our kids, because we don't, you know, we don't hover over them and drive them everywhere and, you know, watch them all the time. We have very high quality time with them. It's just that they're learning how to, you know, they're learning how to be functioning human beings in the world. And that makes them feel good. It makes us feel good. It's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the perfect note to start to finish up on. So just tell us about your book. So your website is playborhood.com, which is the American spelling. So it's PlayborhodHood.com. You've got your blog on there, and you've got Facebook as well.
Yes, Facebook and the book Playborhood by the same name, available on Amazon. I think Amazon Australia as well. What can I say? I also continue to do public speaking. I was just in Brisbane a couple months ago and did a talk there. That's the first time I've ever been in Australia. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, excellent.
Yes, and there are you know, I try to point out on Facebook and Twitter other things that are relevant to the playborhood philosophy. It's a very it's a dynamic field. A lot of debate among parents about how they should raise their kids, but I do feel like the attitude that you and I are both espousing, Tara, is gaining some traction. I think people are realizing they've gone overboard, and their kids, it's sad to say, a lot of kids, especially teens these days, are miserable, and their parents aren't very happy either, and it's because it's not working. It's not the pushing kids really hard, controlling them, it just isn't working for the kids, and it's not working for the adults either.
That's right, it really isn't. So we really need to, it's a time to stop checking on what we really are asking, you know, what kids want for themselves, what we're wanting for them, and what qualities we really are, you know, create, what are we nurturing, you know, without free play and with free play, you know, and there's just it's a bit of a no-brainer once you start thinking about it like that. So just quickly before we finish up, so your book actually takes people step by step through this process with lots of ideas on creating, you know, getting them into more play.
Well, there's three parts. The first part is establishes the problem, talks about the problem of the lack of free play among children. The second part goes through a set of examples, neighborhoods in the United States where parents and other adults have created a great environment for kids to play, and where kids have learned to become independent and enjoy themselves, but also be connected to the parents and adults in the neighborhood. Very interesting, very different neighborhoods in the United States. And then the third part is a step-by-step list of recommendations, like the ones I mentioned, like making a neighborhood hangout, like making your neighborhood into a village, encouraging self-reliance, step-by-step list of things that I think parents can do to give their kids a life of neighborhood play.
Yeah, sounds awesome. How much happier would everybody be? Sometimes we make things overcomplicated, and we can really just bring it back to being a bit more simple, can't we?
Well, I would step back though and say, what you and I are talking about, this way of raising kids, is countercultural. It goes against what most parents are doing today. So it feels sometimes like you're going into headwinds. You know, parents look at you strange when you're more permissive and let them play in the street, and other parents aren't doing that. Or when you're not, you know, planning their activities as tightly as other parents are. And so you're going against the grain. You're swimming, you know, upstream, whatever metaphor you want to use. it takes some time. It takes some belief. It's good if you can find other parents who have a similar philosophy. And there is one chapter of the book that I didn't mention before about buying a home. It sounds like a weird thing to have to discuss in a book about neighborhood play. But the fact is, at least in America, families move on average about once every 6 years. And our real estate markets do not help us find homes in places where kids play. And if we can do that, if we can find a place where kids are more likely to play, where we're more likely to find families who think like us, then it makes things much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Finding like-minded people is always a good place to start, isn't it? So I've really enjoyed this conversation because it is something that I'm very passionate about. As I said, especially my little one, I always say my kids are free range, and I'm always like, oh, I don't know where the kids are, and people look at you strangely. but, you know, you really do see there is a lot of stress and anxiety and exhaustion and overstimulation with a lot of children now, and this is one of the key reasons, in my opinion. So I'm really happy to have you on the show, and I'll just give that out again. It's playbehood.com, the website. I'll post it on Facebook and on the description anyway, so people will be able to find it easily. So you have a lovely time. Have you had a birthday party already? You said you had a birthday yesterday.
We just had a birthday party yesterday, and not to get into a lot of long discussion, but I don't know what birthday parties are like in Australia. Here, where we live in the United States, a lot of times, for various reasons, parents don't want to have their birthday parties at home. They want to have them at these party places, you know, where they're jumpy houses or trampolines or such. We have our parties at our house. Our yard is a ton of fun. We have lots of fun things to do. The parents hang out. We have wine and beer and everybody. It's just a huge, super fun party. So we have still coming down from a big high from yesterday. Really, really fun.
Yeah, right. Oh, excellent. Well, thanks for giving us your time, and happy birthday to your little boy there.
Janico, sure.
We'll look forward to following you on Facebook, and again, you can get the book from Amazon. It's called Playbehood by Mike Lanza, and I'll let you go now to the rest of your day, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Taurus. Take care.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
This is the EWN Radio Network.